Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
The Charest government straightforward made a deal through Hydro-Québec that Hydro-Québec would purchase the electricity that Rio Tinto has on the Saguenay River. They would sell that power to Hydro-Québec, and they're making like $10 million a month or something on that, you know, a large amount of money, selling that electricity, which is not being used for producing the aluminum. So they get everything given to them by the government. The government is literally subsidizing to Rio Tinto the cost of the lockout.
That's the voice of journalist and broadcaster Charles Borland. On this week's show, we speak to Charles about an historic protest that took place in Elmer, Quebec, over a lockout at Rio Tinto Alcan, and how that protest was blacked out in the mainstream media. And we also talk about the Harper government's radical agenda in introducing new immigration bill C-31 and what it means for the fabric of Canadian society. So stay tuned.
We don't really know what the consequences of our actions will be, you know, what that catalyst moment of change will be. But we know that if we continuously do something, we're bound to create change. We're bound to at least strive towards the direction that we want to be. Someone who is constantly striving and organizing and tirelessly informing us is my next guest. Charles Borland is a journalist. He was well known in British Columbia for his show Wake Up with Co-op and his show Discussions on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Very privileged to have you on our program. Thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Sylvia. Thanks.
Now, you know, when we think about this culture, neoliberalism, it's almost like a religion nowadays. You know, everywhere you look, there's a new package of austerity measures being introduced. In Greece, we know that the austerity package has meant 5 years of draconian cuts, and it has created an incredible depression in the society there. We are, I guess, in many ways in the dark here, because we're not even hearing of the endless demonstrations going on in Europe. So I wonder if we could begin there. You know, this attack on the workers, this attack on the working class seems to be symbiotic with neoliberalism. And I wonder if you could maybe contextualize by situating it, how is this affecting us and how is this affecting the labor movement, the industries that depend on our organization and our ability to defend our rights?
Okay, Sylvia, well, you could start in Europe. You could just make the point exactly that this assault by the biggest and most powerful monopolies, they're located, whether they're in Germany or whether they're in the United States of America or Japan or wherever, they are striving amongst themselves and in contest amongst, you know, against themselves, but as well against the entire working class of various countries, every country really. And also, and this is very important, Sylvia, they are striving to eliminate any resistance of the sovereignty of states, the sovereignty of nations and peoples. So they don't want anyone to buck them. They don't want anyone to contradict them in pushing for their interests. So, for example, in a country like Greece, as you point out, they have taken these draconian measures, but they've actually basically sold away Greece. For example, the port of Piraeus, the port of Athens, great port of Athens, Piraeus, has been sold for cash to the Chinese Overseas Shipping Company. And they fired all the longshoremen on the docks, and they hired their own workers at non-union wages and impoverished wages without working conditions, you know, bad working conditions and so on and so forth. So this is the sort of thing. And the Greek youth, of course, are compelled as a result to migrate to Germany or to North America to search for jobs. And this is a destruction of the nation, you see, and it goes on in Canada as well. If you want to see what we've, you know, one of the consequences here, of course, has been to grossly undermine the manufacturing base in Canada, in the United States as well. And so we've lost tens of thousands of unionized, good-paying jobs, and the working class has been greatly undermined in this way. And then when they'd say, well, what is Canada good for? Well, Canada's good for its 10 million square kilometers of wealthy resources, which are taken at the expense of the indigenous peoples, and they're taken at the expense of the working class. Because if you go to places like northeast British Columbia here, in the fracking gas development areas, or in the coal mine areas, or in more importantly in the oil and gas areas of Alberta, you'll see these camps made up of aluminum trailers, and I think there's 40 or 50 or 60,000 workers in Alberta living in these terrible conditions. They're of course they're saturated with drugs. You work these terrifically long hours. There's no family life. There's no community life. There's no stability of any kind. Imperial Oil is going to build its brand new extraction plant in Alberta on the tar sands, and there's going to be no community. There's going to be strictly fly in, fly out. Well, they could fly in from St. John, Newfoundland. They could fly in from Alberta. They could fly in from Vancouver's and or Nanaimo, where the pulp mills are down, you see. So this is a great undermining of the society, a very good example, too, of the kind of arrogant dictate of these monopolies that make up this financial oligarchy that's doing all of this stuff around the world. Is the big corporation Rio Tinto, which purchased Alcan back in, I think, 2007. And recently, one of the attacks on the workers has been in a little city called Alma, Quebec, which is right at the place where the Saguenay River begins to flow out of Lac Saint-Jean in the interior of Quebec. It's a very famous, very beautiful place in Quebec history. And that river has a very fast current, and they have been able to make a number of hydro electric dams there. And they have virtually been given over originally to Alcan, but then, of course, Rio Tinto purchased Alcan. And Rio Tinto bought Alcan at an exaggerated price. The crisis of 2008 came. It almost halved the price of raw aluminum. And Rio Tinto was in a bit of a bind, so they thought, well, they'll pass on their financial mistake to the workers. And one of the ways they did that, Sylvia, was that they said, okay, we're going to contract out the work of the unionized workers. So you literally had a situation in the aluminum refining mills, plants at in Alma. Alma is a town of about 30,000 people, and the aluminum production is the key. It's the backbone of the town, right? So you literally would have an uncle working with a unionized job, United Steelworkers Union there, making $30 an hour, and right alongside of him would be his nephew, who is working for a subcontractor doing exactly the same work for $15 an hour. Well, the union said, this is not, this is not a goal here, because you guys, Alcan, got this free electricity, which is their big economic advantage to producing aluminum in that town. They get the electricity for nothing, and your social contractual obligation was to provide stable, unionized jobs and give our community a kind of stability there. Well, Rio Tinto had another scheme in mind, and their scheme was, how are they going to raise the price of aluminum back to what it was, you know, in the 2007 year when they bought Alcan? They want to jack the international price of aluminum up. And, of course, as you know, if you can monopolize supply and cut it back arbitrarily, then you can raise the price of the commodity. And that's exactly what they did. So the plan was, okay, on the one hand, we can undermine the union in Alma. We can demand unlimited subcontracting. And on the other hand, we can impose a lockout, which they did. They did that on December the 30th. In fact, they did it illegally, Sylvia. They did it the day before the contract ended. They threw the workers out with a bunch of imported security people who were English-speaking against all these French-speaking Quebecers. They threw them out of the mill, threw them out of the refinery there. They locked them out. They are jacking up the price of aluminum. But here's the deal, Sylvia, and this is how this damnable neoliberal agenda works. The private interests, Rio Tinto's interests, are the ones with political power. They're the ones with the political clout with the government. Now, normally the government says, no, we don't want to get involved. You know, it's up between the company and the workers. They have to sort these things out. We'll be neutral. They don't have that posturing anymore. The Charest government straightforward made a deal through Hydro-Québec that Hydro-Québec would purchase the electricity that Rio Tinto has on the Saguenay River. They would sell that power to Hydro-Québec, and they're making like $10 million a month or something on that, you know, a large amount of money, selling that electricity, which is not being used for producing the aluminum. So they get everything given to them by the government. The government is literally subsidizing to Rio Tinto the cost of the lockout. And so they get the benefit of having the aluminum production shut down to raise the price of aluminum. They don't lose any money because they're selling the electricity to Hydro-Québec. So against all of this odds, the workers in ALMA have really dug in and started to fight. And they did something that was quite remarkable, Sylvia. And here's the other side of the neoliberal agenda. We don't get to hear about it because the whole media is so monopolized. They say, well, you know, the fact that there was a demonstration of 8,000 workers in a town of 30,000 people, you know, put that in Vancouver's context. We've got 2 million people. You know, imagine if we had, you know, a third of the population out in a demonstration. Well, you know, they had this humongous demonstration in ALMA, and that was on March 31st, the last day of March. And they marched through the whole city. Not only they had the people from the community, they had people, workers came from Kitimat, British Columbia, of course they're fellow aluminum producers, right, in the Canadian Auto Workers Union. They went there in solidarity with them. Hamilton workers, the local 1005, and other workers went there from Toronto, they went there and so on. But even more importantly, Sylvia, the workers from around the world sent representatives there. And it's very important, you see, because Rio Tinto is a huge multinational. They attack workers in Australia. They shut down an aluminum plant in the United Kingdom. They attack workers here. They attack workers there. And they're notorious for attacking workers. But they like to present themselves, of course, as, you know, Mr. Clean, right, as the nice guys. It's these terrible union people who are trying to blackmail this poor company and so on and so forth. Well, they gave a resounding answer to these attacks with this huge demonstration on March 31st. And I thought, because it was, I Googled, and there wasn't a single newspaper report, not in the Globe and Mail, in the Quebec press, yes. In French, there were reports, no doubt, but not a single word here. So I thought, well, it would be very good to let your listeners know that this big event did take place. And if I might, Sylvia, just to give you a sense of the people who came to speak from around the world there and how important they felt it was to take a stand against Rio Tinto and support these workers, if I could read you just a few of their comments.
Sure, go ahead.
All right. Well, here's... I think it's pronounced Jyrki Reina. He's originally from Sweden. He's the General Secretary of the International Metalworkers Federation. He said, I'm bringing greetings here on behalf of the 50 million industrial workers in 140 countries that are coming into our new union. They're going to pull that together formally in June. And he says, he makes the point, he says, Rio Tinto is a cynical multinational whose philosophy is to maximize profits and dividends and reduce labor costs. Rio Tinto must keep in mind that its profits come from the work of the workers and from the communities in which it operates. Last year, this company made a net profit of $6 billion. So there's no justification in these circumstances for replacing good permanent jobs with subcontracted ones where workers are paid 50% less, having less benefits, and where the community is losing. So that was him. Then there's a man by the name of Manfred Warda, who is the General Secretary of the International Federation of Chemical, Energy, Mine, and General Workers Union. He came from Switzerland as well, and he speaks on behalf of 20 million workers, and he says, shame on Rio Tinto that made $15 billion gross profits in 2011 and is trying to reduce your benefits, which means less job security, less trade union protection, less income, and less benefits. And then he says, shame on Rio Tinto CEO Tom Albanese, who pocketed millions of dollars but does not give a damn about your families, your communities, and your history. And then we had the MNA from that's the member of the National Assembly from the Parti Québécois who spoke there, Alexander Cloutier. Then there was a man by the name of Claude Patrive, who's a member of parliament for the NDP from Jonquière-Alma. he spoke, then the guy. Now, this is interesting, Sylvia, because, you know, there's been a lot of trade union competition between the Confederation of National Trade Unions, the CSN. But he came there and he spoke about the need for the workers to be united and to take a stand. And he said, we're taking care of our people, our co-workers, our families, our regions. We are that solidarity. The big bosses would like us to tear each other apart, to not work together, but only for ourselves. Today we are showing them that when they attack us on sensitive issues for the working class, all the unions answer present. All the unions across the globe are going to stand with the ALMA workers. Why? It is because these big companies want to break the trade union unity in each factory. They want to divide the workers by giving to subcontractors the jobs we won with great difficulty with our fights, with our strikes over so many years. They want to force us to our knees, but they are going to fail. Everywhere in the world, whenever there is a struggle in defense of the basic rights of the unions, we must all give the same answer. Today it is in ALMA, tomorrow everywhere in the world, solidarity. So what you had there, Sylvia, was an event that was totally silenced in the English-speaking press, in the English-speaking media, not a word on television, not a word on the radio, 8,000 people taking a very firm stand in defense of hard-won union rights that are being hollowed out by exactly what you introduced the program, this discussion, by saying it's an assault of the neoliberal, almost religious-like, and you're quite right about that, the way they speak of themselves. They're the angels, and these dastardly workers who are such a high cost of production, you know, the ones that do all the work for these angels living in heaven, and it's just an absolutely irrational and ludicrous effort to turn the world upside down. But of course they have a lot of publicity, a lot of means of doing that. They have the governments under their control and they have the media under their control. So it's a tough fight. But the fact is that the producers do produce. And when they get together and take a stand, you get a very, very impressive demonstration like that historic, I'm sure that's an historic demonstration for ALMA Quebec and maybe for Quebec altogether, to have so many workers and so many international reps coming to defend a just worker struggle in their nation.
I want to point out that you know, just as they neglected to tell us about the action, you know, this massive demonstration in ALMA Quebec, the strike, the general strike in Spain was equally silenced. 10 million workers put down their tools, you know, just the day before they were voting on the austerity measures that is being imposed, as you know, in Europe, and so. You know, the pain is being felt throughout the South, the global South, right? When we heard of the Arab Spring, I don't think that the media was too excited, but they pretended to be excited. They celebrated because we have this narrative that, you know, well, Tunisia's poor. They're the third world. But now you have Greece, you have people in Canada rising up. Those stories don't need to be covered because that contradicts this story of neoliberalism being able to bring prosperity, right? The poor people, yes, let them rise up. You know, they'll be better. They'll get rid of the dictatorship and they'll have democracy. What about us? Where is our democracy? I want to talk about the kind of government we have here in Canada. And I want to begin by pointing out that, you know, the April 4th was Immigration Day, the Immigrant Day. And it's interesting to me that we have days, you know, that we recognize that there's so much injustice and suffering. But more than a day, I think it's a signal for us to realize that this government is not only rabid against the workers, it's also going, creating a world of insecurity where the migrant workers come here to be indentured slaves, you know, working for pittance. And the workers here are being displaced and dispossessed of even the right to earn a living. So how do we break that stronghold? Because, I mean, I've had enough. I had, you know, this imposition of the tar sands and the Enbridge pipeline that continuously, they continue in spite of all the resistance, in spite of public resistance to it, the austerity budget that's now being imposed. And, you know, Bill C-31 just literally is the last straw for me.
Well, I hope it's not, because I'm afraid there's more straws coming. And Bill C-31 is more than a straw. It's more like a telephone pole falling on your head. This is an enormously reactionary, arbitrary act. It's very, very dangerous for Canadians, for the Canadian polities, Sylvia, because really what it does is it creates a kind of apartheid. It reinforces and strengthens an apartheid kind of Canada, that where you'll even have different grades of citizenship. You have to remember, Jason Kenney is the guy who's introducing it. It's called the Protecting Canada's Immigration System Act. That's the name of it. It's an omnibus. It deals with a whole lot of pieces of legislation. The essence of it is that it attacks rights and it violates international humanitarian law. It's like the security certificates. It's part of the immigration legislation, but it singles out refugees and it will deny citizenship to thousands of refugees who've already become landed immigrants, Sylvia. This is the thing. They've already come here as refugees. They've lived, even if their country's changed a bit, like, for example, Chile, okay? So Chile is no longer the fascist dictatorship of Pinochet. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of people came at that time as political refugees, very legitimately so, and then they became landed immigrants, and some even have become citizens. But now they're saying that once the country is no longer not democratic, not dictatorial, then they can not only liquidate your refugee status, which they could before. You were no longer designated as a refugee, but you kept your landed immigrant status, of course, because you were living here, your family's here, you've had kids here, and you're part of the Canadian life here. So now this new legislation says that they can liquidate not only your refugee status, but also your landed immigrant status, and then they can deport you. So this is a very, very draconian piece of legislation. It sort of takes us back, really, to the 1930s when not just Ukrainians and Russians and others who were in the progressive movement or were communists or were political activists or trade union organizers, they would deport those, but they would deport people to Britain for good British English talk, and that's even before Canada had a Canadian immigrant Canadian citizenship status. We were part of the British Empire, but they deported people there for political reasons. So we're really, it's a very, very retrogressive system. The man talks about, Kenny, he says, oh, no, Canada's got a generous refugee system and all this. Well, the fact is, since coming to power, the Harper government has reduced the number of refugees entering Canada. According to Citizenship and Immigration Canada, the number of refugees having their claim for asylum approved dropped by 56% between 2005 and 2008. In 2010, there were 8,466 pre-removal risk assessment applications made by asylum seekers facing deportation. Of those 8,466, 89 were approved. So there's no great generous refugee system in Canada whatsoever. It's being very, very curtailed, in fact, and quite contrary to the tradition. And the other thing about this refugee thing, Sylvia, and you've hinted at it and spoken to it about it directly before, and that is that Canada gets waves of immigrants because Canada is part of a system of empire-building states, like the NATO states that bombed Yugoslavia, or the alliance that fought in the Korean War back in the 50s, or invaded Afghanistan, or the alliance of the willing, or whatever Bush used to call it when he invaded Iraq. Well, this is what gives rise to the waves of immigrants. The illegal war against Libya, for example, created a huge humanitarian and refugee crisis. Well, Canada doesn't take responsibility for that at one single bit. These people could go to anybody else's country, but they're not allowed to come here. And there's another feature to this, too. This whole thing, if you do an overview of the bill, one of the things that it has is this whole thing about ministerial power to declare certain societies that doesn't produce refugees. So they, like, for example, they will say, well, Hungary doesn't produce any refugees. Well, that's like saying Israel doesn't produce any refugees because Israel's a democratic country, and so what do the Palestinian refugees, who are they? That they have no status, they have no existence as refugees because Israel's a democratic country. If you look at Hungary, for example, or any of a number of these East European countries that have joined NATO in the last little while, or even France, you'll find out that there is a terrible discrimination against the people of Roma descent. Now, the Roma people are a people, as you probably know, came from India hundreds of years ago, been migrating into Europe since, and they have been systematic victims. They were slaughtered during the Second World War, by the Nazis. I think there's about 1 million or 1.5 million Roma people were killed, along with Jewish people and you know, everybody else who the Nazis wanted to eliminate. And so they suffered genocide at that time. But right now, they're being attacked in countries as the, quote, our great democratic ally, France. You know, President Sarkozy has been carrying on a campaign to arbitrarily deport the Roma people to Romania and Bulgaria. Some 20,000 were deported from France in the years 2009 and 2010. French authorities were seen bulldozing their camps. There was quite a scandal just not so very long ago. And they said, oh, no, we're not singling out the Roma people. No, we're not. No. But then they discovered a memo. And this is a memo right out of Sarkozy's government office. It says, and this is 2010, it says, quote, I'm reading you from the memo, 300 camps or illegal settlements must be evacuated within 3 months. Roma camps are a priority. It is down to the prefect level in each department to begin a systematic dismantling of the illegal camps, particularly those of the Roma. Now, if you're a Roma person in France and you apply for refugee status in Canada, wouldn't you think that a person that has been had his house bulldozed down by a government who's singling him out as a Roma person should be a refugee? I mean, that's the definition of a refugee. A refugee is somebody who's been singled out by their nationality or their religion or their political beliefs and persecuted by the government. Well, that's exactly what's happening under Sarkozy in France. So, you know, this bill, C-31, goes directly against the various protocols and treaties on refugees that Canada has signed. And it is attacking refugee population, and it's this whole divide and rule. And then targeting groups of people like the Roma, saying, oh, they're just seeking immigrant landed status. They're not really politically persecuted. These are all democracy. France is a democracy. Hungary is a democracy. Israel is a democracy. They're all democracy. And we'll tell you who's a democracy. We'll even tell you that Mexico is a democracy and that Mexico doesn't have any refugees. Well, Sylvia, you know that's just absolute idiocy. Everybody in Canada knows that Mexico is churning in a virtual civil war between the drug lords and the army and the government and so on, and all sorts of innocent people are being persecuted and attacked and their lives are threatened because they say anything against this terrible state of affairs. So Bill C-31 is something that should definitely be opposed by all Canadians. You know, we do like to think of ourselves as a country that stands for, you know, one for all for one, that people, and people in Canada come from everywhere on this planet. There's every nationality in this country. People who come here as refugees ought to be treated with respect. They ought to be given a right to work and a chance to carry out their life.
Take care. Talk to you soon.
You bet. Bye-bye now.
That was Charles Borland. He is the journalist with Co-op Radio, and his program Discussions is every Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.